I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word Podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word Podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.
Hi, I'm Dan Dunn, the host of What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn, a show that mixes history, culture, politics, famous people, and booze, and strains it through the cognitive mesh of my sozzled gray matter. Join me each week as I take a lighthearted stroll through the consequential role that alcohol has played through the ages, and how it shaped key moments in history, quite literally changing the world. For instance, did you know that Thomas Jefferson started the first U.S. wine company in Virginia with investments from George Washington and Ben Franklin? It's true. And if you're wondering whose winery sits across the street from Jefferson's estate today, here's a hint. What's orange, president, and has a very good brain and the best people. I'll also tell you about new stuff to drink, trends, recipes, and other things that are good to know. And I'll chat up celebrities, along with the movers and shakers of the adult beverage world. And since this is a show about alcohol, I'd like to remind you that drinking can cause memory loss. Or even worse, memory loss. Where was I? Oh, right. Plugging my show. It's called What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn. It's fun, I promise. So come on, pull up a bar stool and let's kick it.
Welcome to the Start Me Up podcast, part of MSW Media and the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. I'm your host, Kimberly Johnson in D.C. Today, my returning guest is Greg Oliar. He's the author of the book Rough Beast. He's also a columnist and podcaster for the Prevail Substack. He's the co-host of the 5-8, and he's just overall awesome. I love Greg so much. It's been a while since he's been on the show. There's so much to talk about. So much. But before we get into it, the Start Me Up podcast is independent, listener-funded, and woman-run. Visit patreon.com/startmeup to see the variety of tiers offered, including the option to get a bonus What's Up episode every Tuesday. It's kind of like my online journal where I get a little more personal and I talk about whatever's on my mind. There's also an ad-free tier with a much shorter intro. Just visit patreon.com/startmeup. Now please enjoy my conversation with Greg Oliar. Welcome back to the show, Greg.
It's lovely to see you, even though I can't see you. I'm just talking.
Well, this is my first time recording on a new system, so I'm only slightly nervous. I think everything will be fine, but, you know, just for whatever. It's good to talk to you. The last time we spoke, we had a really thriving democracy, and now everything is shit. So I need to talk to you about that, and I want to see what you're feeling. And first of all, how are you? How is it going for you during these crazy times?
You know, I think it's like everybody else. I mean, every day there's multiple times when I just think, I can't believe we're in this timeline and that this happened. I mean, you know, you've been on this for years and years. I've been on this for years and years. And I literally wrote a book about what was going to happen. Yeah. And I'm still shocked about the speed, even though I kind of intellectually knew what would happen. The speed and the destructive power, and I did not foresee Trump's emperor-empress relationship with Musk. Mm-hmm. That was a surprise a little bit, I have to say. But for me personally, I'm fine. You know, I mean, things are fine. I put out a book of my Sunday Pages essays, which are more literary essays, 2 weeks ago, just as a, you know, something else to think about. And I think, you know, aside from the world falling off its axis and into the pits of hell, I mean, it's great. You know, life is good. What can I tell you?
Oh, my God. Okay, well, let's start off with on February 28th, which is next Friday, there's a general strike. And I'm going to participate in this. I don't know how well organized this is, and I don't know how many people actually know about it. But, like, number one, did you know about it?
I did.
Okay.
Yes.
I want to know what you're thinking of that. Now, we've got different ways we can protest. This would be one of them. So, in your opinion, okay, let's just say that this strike is, I'm not going to say effective because my whole question is about the effectiveness of doing this. But I mean, let's just say we do this, and then we already see right now that there are people showing up holding signs. Do you think one is better than the other? What do you think about this strike?
I think that we need to hit the bad guys with every single thing we have.
Mm-hmm.
And that anything that that we try is better than nothing.
Yeah.
So we're going to keep trying things until something works and something sticks. And,
yeah.
You know, a general strike in theory would be great, you know, because first of all, it would calm everybody down and everybody would have to be sort of forced to take a step back and think about what's happening or learn about what's happening. Because a lot of people have no freaking idea what's happening.
Yeah.
And it would, you know, one day of not buying on Amazon or whatever would hurt the profits, you know, and potentially wake up. And I think that, you know, showing us being unified would send a message to, you know, certainly the politicians, one would imagine. But, you know, is it going to suddenly, everything's going to be fine on March 1st?
No.
Probably not.
No.
you know, I know that the meteor is going to, the asteroid is going to hit Earth, but I heard it's not until 2030. So,
man.
It's too far in the future.
Yeah. Damn it. that fucking meteor. Why can't it just hurry up?
I know.
Well, I think I'm looking at this strike as it's not necessarily about making everything right the next day. If we prove to have some kind of impact, even if it's small, then I think that will inspire us to do it again. And, you know, maybe more people will join. So, and then there are people out there, I've seen people worried about whether they, like, I can't remember who it was, but there are people who are worried about their personal situation, like with Amazon or Target or whatever it is. They're like, yeah, well, we have items in there and this is how we make our living. And if you're not going to shop there, you're punishing us. Well, specifically for, not so much for Amazon, because that's a different story, but just in a general strike, it's only one day. It's not like people are never going to go shopping again, obviously. So one day is going to send a huge message, but it's not necessarily going to impact. I mean, I have books on Amazon. So do you. I don't care. I don't care. I mean, first of all, my books don't sell. I'm not worried about losing money on that. But either way, even if I was making money on it, it's just one day. And then everything goes back. So everybody's putting everything on hold for one day. And I think that we can make a real impact if we do this, but it's like enough people have to do it. And as you said, not so many people know about it. So I saw there was another one, and I think it was on March 15th, but I'm not sure. I'm not going to worry about that one until we see what happens on February 28th. But now let me ask you this. Are you fearful that... Yes, me too. People showing up in person holding signs. I mean, there's the whole thing of, we saw what he did in 2020 with the upside down Bible and the tear gassing the protesters. So in this regime, it's more likely that he would declare martial law. It's more likely that he would shoot or arrest protesters. So as far as, you know, what would your advice be to people, or what do you think about people showing up? I mean, they're doing it now and they're able to show up and not get arrested. But do you fear at some point that's going to happen?
I think that any large scale protest movement is going to get, first of all, infiltrated and weaponized eventually.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And people have to be very careful not to fall into that. This is always what happens with these large kind of things. Infiltrated, and also people who are in there trying to instigate shit and start violence, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I agree that the likelihood is much greater for there to be a crackdown in this administration, certainly. The protests so far have been at state houses, as I understand it, which is different. It's not protesting in D.C., and I think that's good. But protesting in D.C., I don't know. But I also, you know, I think obviously a lot of people in the streets sends a message. But in terms of actually affecting the people who are destroying our government, how effective is it? I don't know. I think there's other ways of protest that are more targeted and require fewer people. You know, there are people inside this new administration who are doing the jobs, right? For the most part, those people are anonymous, or, you know, there's been some disclosure of who they are. You know, I think that, you know, I don't want anybody to break any laws, but protesting can be done in a much more targeted way. Let's just say it that way. You know, to be effective, to make somebody in that administration say, wow, this is having an impact on my life. I went to the supermarket and people are, you know, not happy with me. That kind of thing. You know, and are people going to do that? Probably not, you know, but I don't know. It remains to be seen. I think there's going to come a point where the amount of damage that he's doing is so great, and also, frankly, the amount of people that no longer will have jobs is so great. One of the side effects of laying off three quarters of the workforce who live in D.C. is that suddenly there's a lot of people in D.C. with nothing else to do, who are perfectly happy going to go march in these protests, maybe. So, you know, I there's going to come a point where everything is so horrifying and bad and scary and dangerous and whatever word you want to use, impacts people in a way that they can't just laugh it off or say, oh, he's not going to do that, or he would never do blah, blah, blah. Well, no, now your Social Security check isn't coming. Now the nursing home where your mother is, they're not, you know, they don't have any more funds coming in, and you either have to pay the bill by the 30th or make room in your house. No, your veterans payments are no longer valid. No, you no longer have health insurance. On and on it goes. No, you, oh, you, something bad happened to your credit report. We're not going to do anything about that. All of these things, there's lots and lots and lots of ways that the actions of this administration are going to harm people. Not might, are there. It's already happening. It's going to get worse. And until we get to a point where there's critical mass of people who are angry enough and understand the threat is real, that's when something's going to happen. So in the meantime, as any way that people can think to protest, I think is good. Do you know, this is something I've been just something I read sometimes. Do you know the Andor, the show Andor?
No.
Okay, so it's a Star Wars thing, which I know, you know, but it's really not. It's really kind of a it's about fascism and resistance movements to the Empire, right? That's what the show is about. And at one point, there's a manifesto that's circulating among the rebels, and you know, this is a throwaway thing on the show, but it's so good that if you don't mind, I want to read it because I think it's germane to what we're talking about.
Please do.
In terms of the protests. Okay. Again, this is from Andor. There will be times when the struggle seems impossible. I know this already. Alone, unsure, dwarfed by the scale of the enemy. Remember this. Freedom is a pure idea. It occurs spontaneously and without instruction. Random acts of insurrection are occurring constantly throughout the galaxy. There are whole armies, battalions, that have no idea that they've already enlisted in the cause. Remember that the frontier of the rebellion is everywhere, and even the smallest act of insurrection pushes our lines forward. And remember this, the imperial need for control is so desperate because it is so unnatural. Tyranny requires constant effort. It breaks. It leaks. Authority is brittle. Oppression is the mask of fear. Remember that. And know this, The day will come when all these skirmishes and battles, these moments of defiance, will have flooded the banks of the Empire's authority, and then there will be one too many. One single thing will break the siege. Remember this. Try.
Wow.
I can't say anything better than that.
Yeah, that's kick ass.
Wow.
And it's helpful. And I think that, you know, after the election, I was just really devastated. It was really hard for me. I'm not alone. I know people are still experiencing that trauma. I'm working on overcoming it, not, you know, not being delusional. I understand what's going on, but we have to have self-care. You know, that's critical and all of that. So I'm working on all of it, but it's been difficult for me because I just feel like I can't really pay attention to the news in the way that I used to. I can't get into the weeds the way I used to, because if I do, I just start, you know, folding up and wanting to hide, and I'll feel defeated, and I don't want to allow myself to feel defeated. So I like to kind of focus on things that make me feel a little bit hopeful, and that does make me feel hopeful. But I the questions that I have for you are, I don't know if this is helpful, but I wrote this. This is what I believe, and maybe I'm wrong. So if you have a different take on this, please tell me.
Mm-hmm.
But I wrote, if he fucks with Social Security and Medicare, Medicaid, this tells me he's not worried about elections, because I believe MAGA will defend almost anything he does, but they won't accept losing their Social Security because they know they paid into it. They want their money. So I think that if this particular regime feels that they have elections locked down, then they can do whatever they want. But if they feel like they're going to lose, obviously that's telling me that they don't feel they have control over our elections. So where are you in this?
That's a good question. Before I get, I want to just respond to something you were saying before, like, you know, about getting in the weeds of the news. Like, nobody is going to be able to be constantly vigilant all the time. And I think it's really important for everybody to pick their spots. I had Catherine Stewart on my podcast, which is going up Friday. And she has a great new book out called Money, Lies, and God. And she was saying, you know, basically pick a lane and stay in your lane. And I think that's good advice, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like I write about the stuff. I research it. I write about it. I give people knowledge about it. That's what I do. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be on the front lines leading the charge up the, you know, to the, I'm not a community organizer. It's not what I am. And I can't do everything. So I'm going to focus on what I can do. And somebody else who's better at the other thing will do that. And I think that's enough, you know, and it's
good.
Everybody needs time when they're going to have to take a break, when they're going to have to pull back, when the, you know, enormity of the thing is going to be overwhelming and scary and paralyzing. And that's fine. We're all going to feel like that a lot in the next, God knows, however long this thing lasts, right? And, you know, self-care is key. Whatever you need to do to get through it, you got to do it. Step back, shut down the laptop, put your phone away, go for a walk, make some omelets, but the eggs are too expensive now. You know, all of that kind of thing. So anyway, that I think that's important for people to hear and to know. Not everybody can do everything, and not everybody has to do everything, but everybody has to do something. That's the point of the Andor thing. Try.
Yes.
Every little thing helps. And I really do believe that. This is a paper cut thing. This is a grain of sand into the bag, straw on the camelback thing. And, you know, that's how it's going to win. That's how we're going to prevail in this fight. So I think your idea about Social Security is interesting and good, and I think it's telling. I am very worried about the elections, and I think people that just sort of flippantly say, we'll get them at the midterms, are not really awake to what is happening now.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the midst of a coup. I don't know if it's total and complete yet, but when that kind of thing happens, the elections become, you know, go to Hungary and ask how the elections are.
Exactly, yeah.
So, will there be elections? Absolutely. Will they be fair? I have no idea.
Yeah.
They may be. I don't know. You know, I don't know how powerful they are. I don't know how effective they are. I don't know what they're capable of doing. I don't know. But that's not something that we can necessarily depend on.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this is it's a coup, but it's also a heist.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing that Saddam Hussein did when he invaded Kuwait was he went to the central bank and he robbed it. because these people are all thieves. That's what they are. At the end of the day, when you distill it to the what they all have in common is that they are thieves, and they just want what we all have. And they're going to look for where the money is, and they're going to try to take it. And the money's in pensions, the money's in various programs, the money's at the Department of Defense, which Musk has been taking for years. The money is in Social Security, Medicare, those funds. That's what they want. That's what they're going to try to take. And they will try. I agree that Social Security is going to be the thing that would unite everybody. The two things, that and the draft. If there's a war and he does the draft, that's going to cut across. But you know what? 6 years ago, I would have said, hey, maybe if there's a big pandemic, that would do it. And it didn't. You know, we have to change the expression avoid it like the plague is no longer.
Right.
We know now people don't avoid plagues. They're just, they listen to Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and they die.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's my
thinking. I mean, I do think, I think that when they start messing with people, I mean, I think about certain MAGA family members that I have. I only have one, but I'm pretty sure she would be upset if her Social Security, I mean, I know that, but I'm not sure because like she's full blown MAGA. And I will say that there's the full blown MAGA. And with that group, it's difficult to determine how they're going to react to anything because they are so brainwashed. And they are so built into this, but they are in the minority. The majority of people in this country are going to be independents, Democrats, and then the Republicans who are understanding that they're getting fucked. So, you know, there are plenty of Republicans out there who don't like Donald Trump. Maybe they voted for him because they thought it was going to be the same as it was that first term. But now they're understanding, especially if they lose their Social Security. So if you put together that group of people, I would assume the midterms are going to be telling, especially if they, you know, maybe they don't get rid of Social Security, but they cut it, or maybe they do damage to Medicare. So we will see in 2026, because if Social Security is messed with, if Medicaid and Medicare are, I mean, it's one thing to have the lunatics, you know, I can't even, what's his name? Hagsmith? I don't even know his name. I can't even. Yeah, whatever. I hate him and I can't fucking be bothered. I don't even want to know his name. So, you know, I mean, those people are dangerous and obviously they're putting us at risk. But the real nitty gritty is our health, our money, and like you said, the draft. And so if they are this administration or this regime, I don't want to call it an administration, is so filled with their own hubris and their own sense of entitlement that, you know, I don't know, maybe they're going to do something thinking that, okay, it'll all pan out in elections. Well, if we see in 2026 the same kind of turnout that we saw in 2018, because that was general election turnout against Trump, well, then I will feel a little hopeful that there is, I mean, I think that because they're constantly cheating by suppressing the vote, legally suppressing the vote. I just think that it's probably easier for them to focus on a general election than a midterm. But if we do see Democrats winning big in midterms, I will definitely feel like there's hope for this country. But we have 2 years, and oh my God, so much has happened in 30 days.
I mean, well, that's the thing. I mean, it hasn't even been a month yet. It's crazy. And, you know, where is it going? Like they've made good on a lot of their promises. So now one of the hopeful things too is that they don't seem inclined to round up 11 million people or 12 or 18 or whatever. It seems like that's all kind of bullshit. And they're, you know, releasing video that isn't real or that's old footage of stuff that, oh, look at who we're rounding up. And they're not really. But and that's good, because if they start doing that, then, you know, where we're headed is for, you know, camps. That's where it goes. Mm-hmm. If they round up, you know, dissidents or rival politicians or, you know, make up ridiculous laws that, you know, charge people with things that are clearly not real and put them in jail and send them to jail in El Salvador. These are all things that would have seemed unthinkable a year ago, but here we are. Marco Rubio, one of the first things he did as Secretary of State, and that guy is a disgusting traitor, and he
Yes.
is fully owned and has been for a long time. He was the chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee. He knows more than almost anyone alive what's happening. And he's still in bed with these people, which means they have something on him and they own him. And it's not just his ambition. It's not just that. It's they have something on him. I'm convinced of that. And one of the first things he did is go to El Salvador and make an arrangement where we can send surplus prison population there. I mean, that's why is that a priority? You know, is it just for show that he can say we were doing this because of the immigrants and no one's going to know how many people are there and he can lie and say we have 5 million of it? Maybe. But, you know, it's also very, very scary, you know, because it doesn't they can deputize the sheriff's offices, which I know Mike Flynn's group was big into the sheriff's offices. Those are elected officials. They're not real cops. Maybe some of them are, but the position, anybody can be the sheriff. So they have tremendous power. My guess is that the local police forces would be really happy to round people up of any kind, you know, for any reason, if they were given the green light and some sort of immunity by the leader of the country. So it's not like they're not going to have little mini Gestapos at their beck and call if that's what they want to do. And as we're recording this, Patel is not in at FBI yet. That to me, it might not be the most dangerous in terms of people dying. That would be RFK or Tulsi.
Right.
But it's going to be the most dangerous on the ground immediately because it's going to have a chilling effect. That guy is only there, and he's said this a lot. He's there for purposes of retribution and to go after Trump's enemies. They've already, you know, they've fired people that worked on cases, which is ridiculous. It's now whoever's left there are either loyalists or people that just happened not to get assigned to those cases. So unless we see some sort of, you know, again, if half the FBI is suddenly unemployed, that seems like maybe a group of people that would I'd like to have on our side.
Yes.
And maybe that group can turn into something, you know, but I would prefer that Patel was not there because I see him just trying to go after Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger and Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff and people like that, make examples of a couple of them, and then everybody else will stop.
Fall in line, yeah.
Which is what we should have been doing, by the way, when they actually broke actual laws.
Right, exactly.
We've been talking about this for years. When those Republicans, when Gates and those guys went into the skiff, they should have been arrested. But they weren't. Nothing happened. There was zero. There's never been any consequences or any accountability for anything that any of these people have done. Even the besiegers of our Capitol basically were in jail for like, what, a year?
Yeah.
And now they're free. The ones that didn't immediately commit more
crime. Yeah. And exactly. The ones who aren't back in jail or dead now because they were shot by police for breaking the law. You know what? You said something about Liz Cheney, and I wonder about her because I know, you know, her whole thing was like, bring a Donald. And, you know, whether it's Adam Schiff or Nancy Pelosi, that's one thing. But if you mess with the Cheney, I feel like, you know, Dick is her brother. We all know Dick Cheney. I mean, Hillary Clinton called him Darth Vader. And I feel like he's on the side of democracy. Obviously, so is Liz Cheney. And, you know, I have to just say this because I don't agree with them politically on anything. But they do recognize the Constitution and they are fighting for democracy. So regardless of how they vote or what their political ideology is, they are pro-democracy. And I just wonder if... I think it would be stupid for this regime to go after her specifically because, like with Pelosi, Cheney is kind of, it's like he was one of them before they turned into what they are now, before they were MAGA. So, like, he has connections, he has money, he has influence, and then he's a Cheney. You know, he shot his friend in the face. Okay, not intentionally, but still. So I'm wondering if perhaps there's kind of a little bit of hope that whether or not Liz Cheney is pursued by this regime, that maybe she would start a new kind of a Republican Party? Or do you have any thoughts? Have you thought about that?
Yeah, I thought that it would have happened by now. I remember telling my son, like, Liz Cheney's going to be the nominee in 2020. Because, duh, you know, they can't go with this guy. He's clearly guilty. And they need to go with the only person who doesn't have his stink on. And that's her.
You mean 2024?
I think I meant 2020. I think it was that long ago. So it was right after the Mueller thing dropped.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. So 2020, right.
I remember, I mean, when I read the Mueller report, which was in April of 2019, I believe, I remember thinking, well, he can't run for president again. Oh, silly rabbit. Tricks you for kids. You know, you also said it would be stupid for them to do this. They fired the NASA people. Have you seen who's running this thing? This is not Mensa.
It's no, you're right. Meeting. You're right. It would be stupid because they are stupid.
Yeah. Also, like, Matt Gaetz went to Liz Cheney's district and said, don't vote for her. And people in Wyoming didn't vote for her.
Wow.
So, you know, yes, she has power to some degree, but how much does she really have? Mm-hmm. And I would argue that, you know, taking her out metaphorically or literally, maybe they do a little, I don't know what they're going to do. They're mm-hmm. evil. Mm-hmm. Would have even more of an effect because it would cause the whoever is actually in Congress to not go against the grain. I mean, there's reports of
that's true.
One of the guy, I forget who it was, getting, you know, credible death threats if he didn't vote the way that Trump, you know, but which is, again, Trump is a mobster. You know, he is been involved in organized crime his entire life. He is a creature. He's second generation. He knows all these people. He is deeply, deeply into that world and always has been. And this is second nature to him. So it's not like, you know, I'm suddenly there pretending I'm the Godfather. This is a guy who that's how he operates. And it's always how he's operated. And now he has literally unlimited power because there's, you know, because John Roberts gave him immunity from doing anything, I guess, which I think is something that the Supreme Court is going to come to regret when they suddenly have zero power next year or whenever it is.
Great. Okay, we have to take a quick little break, but we'll be back after this message. Hey, this is Kimberly, the host of the show you're listening to right now. If you enjoy what you're hearing, please consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/startmeup. You'll see all the tiers. You can make your choice. I thank you in advance. All right, so let me ask you this. I don't even know if I want to, but does Elon stick around? And I just want to, okay, I gotta get this thing. So we know that Elon was meeting with Putin before the election.
Talked to him a lot on the phone, yes.
Yes, talked to him a lot on the phone. And then it was November 11th. I keep talking about this, but on November 11th, the Russian news agency put out a statement by Patrushev, which is a Russian presidential aide. He said, to achieve success in the election, Donald Trump relied on certain forces to which he has corresponding obligations. As a responsible person, he will be obliged to fulfill them. So that was November 11th, right after the election. Basically, Russian, you know, presidential aide is coming out and saying, all right, we helped you with this election and now you owe us. And then we know that Elon has been, you know, meeting with Putin and they have a shared interest. So there's all this, you know, President Musk and people say, oh, you know, he's going to be out of there in a second because Donald can't handle somebody being above him. Except now we're seeing, you know, that video of Elon basically holding a presser in the Oval Office with his child. And I guess there was an interview last night or sometime this week where Elon was sitting down and talking and Trump was just kind of quiet, letting Elon take over. So I'm not too sure about this whole idea that, you know, I think Rachel Maddow back in the first term would have that revolving door of people coming in and out of the administration. And I think we thought maybe we were going to see that and maybe we will. But is Elon here to stay, do you think?
Well, it's a two-pronged question. The first thing is, They capitulated to Russia in Ukraine already. The president has enormous leeway in terms of foreign affairs, and they basically gave it all away. Trump talked to Putin. He came out of the meeting and gave Putin everything that he wanted without getting anything in return. So that already happened. Fundamentally, that's no different than FDR going to Berlin in 1940, and then, going to the fireside chat and blaming the concentration camps on the Jews. That's what's happening. That already happened this week. So the idea that Trump isn't beholden to Putin is absurd. And you and I and plenty of other people have been saying this for years, but anyone who now argues that has no more argument. He just, Helsinki happened behind closed doors. This happened right in the open, everybody to see. That's what happened. He put out a thing on his Truth Social, and there's no more debate. Now, as for Musk, I was surprised. First of all, I hate Musk, and I have for years, even before we
Me
sort of
too.
realized he's bad. I think I have a visceral reaction to him, his
Me
face.
too.
I know I can sense how bad he is. But anyway, I was surprised that he stuck around and this Doge thing has any kind of anything because they're not allowed to do anything with the money. Like Congress does the money, but apparently no. The relationship that they have, because I was trying to figure out what it was, and I wrote a piece about this on my Substack. It harkens back to the days of the Byzantine Empire, where you had the emperor and the empress. And what would often happen is that the empress would be smarter and better at administrating and, savvier and all that kind of stuff. And the emperor would just kind of sit around or else go off to, fight wars and stuff. And as long as the empress remained married to the emperor or a emperor or the mother of an emperor, something. Where the emperor was somebody that she could work with, she could do whatever she wanted, and it was her job to effectively run the entire administration of the empire within the boundaries, domestic stuff. And that's what we're seeing now. Elon Musk is the empress and Trump is the emperor. And I don't mean this in a ha ha ha, Musk is a woman. Like I'm not, it's not about gender, it's about power dynamics. So he's been given full rein to do whatever he wants, which is what he's doing. But when Trump goes, so does Musk. So without Trump, Musk has zero power. None. He's gone within 5 minutes. It doesn't work the other way around. Trump could get rid of Musk tomorrow, although I think they've whatever hijinks they've been up to is so bad and so illegal that I think Musk said on one of these podcasts that if Kamala was elected, he would go to jail. So this isn't me speculating, right? I don't know what they did, but they've done things. They've worked with the Russians. They probably work with the Chinese. It's all bad, like horrifyingly bad. And I think that's why Trump is content to just sit there. Also, like the guy's fucking 80. He just wants to play golf and sexually harass people. Like, I don't think he cares that much. He wants people to applaud him and tell him how great he is. I don't think he has it in him to be an actual, dictator per se, if that makes sense. Like
Yeah,
he's
he
too
just wanted
old.
to stay out of jail.
So I think he's happy to find somebody that is gonna, run the show for him. If it gets to the point where, Jen Mercia was on the 5-8 a couple weeks ago, and she said two narcissists walk into a room, only one walks out. And if it comes to a head there, my money is on Trump, honestly, because I think Elon is as whatever the word is, as he is to get this far, Trump is a lifelong criminal. And I just think he knows better how to deal with people in a negative way to remove them than Musk does. Maybe I'm wrong, but that would be my pick in that Super Bowl of horrors. So,
So, okay, there's been a lot of speculation about not that Donald Trump was the, I can't remember who it was. It was the Jack Smith account. I don't even see that anymore. But back in, I think it was October, that Jack Smith account, and it wasn't actually Jack Smith, but it was the account on Blue Sky and whatnot. So anyway, said that basically he was just the head to get them elected. and that once elected, he's not so much useful anymore. But from what you're saying, Donald Trump is useful, especially when it comes to somebody like Elon Musk. And so, you know, I've wondered about this because not only, I mean, I don't think Trump is in the best health or anything, but I mean, he could live until his 90s. So we just don't know.
Evil preserves.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen with Kissinger and Murdoch and people like that. No, but the thing is that Musk doesn't need Trump to be the emperor. He just needs someone. Vance would do the same thing, presumably.
Okay.
The difference being that Vance,
I see what you mean. Okay.
Is somewhat of a wild card because we don't, you know, he is a fascist and he's been in with that NRX crowd that wants a monarchy. Like he is intellectually, ideologically one of those people and has been for years. I warned about this, you know, even before he was picked, that picking Vance was going to be terrible because it portends horrible fascism. However, you know, he might get in there and change having that much power and not having to answer to somebody necessarily in the way that Trump would or did. Vance also doesn't have a cult of personality around him and never will.
Right.
He's got a room full of couches, maybe, but that's about it.
I forgot all about that.
He's you know, Herman Miller, whatever, but Ethan Allen.
Right.
So, Fortunoff, wherever you get your furniture. But what they need Trump for is the elections, because these other people are not popular.
Yeah.
They just aren't, you know, they're not going to win. They need him to drag people out of the, you know, the non-voting population to come out and do the thing. That's what they need.
So I want to kind of switch this over to, let's just say that we do have a fair election in 2028. I mean, that really, I don't know. So this is just right now a hypothetical question. What do you think, as far as Democrats? I mean, I think the person right now that stands out the most would be Gavin Newsom, but that I'm not saying he would be the nominee. But I think that the reason I would even say anything about him is just because he seems to, I haven't heard much of him from him lately, but he seems to understand messaging really well. He's younger. He knows, he's really smart. And no matter what you ask him, I mean, I no longer watch Bill Maher. I have not watched Bill Maher for years and years and years. But every time that I saw Gavin on that show, it was like he was a walking encyclopedia. It didn't matter what the question was. If you asked him, he had knowledge and he could talk about it with authority. And so, you know, I'm wondering if I do not believe that they, you know, I know that there is the push for Donald Trump to run again, but let, you know, again, with the hypothetical, I don't think that would happen. So whoever they would put up, I don't know who they would put up. I have no idea. But I mean, do you think that there would be a chance if the Democrats are able, and do you think the Democrats are able to find a candidate that would excite people? And now it might not be Gavin Newsom, right? Somebody else could emerge that would be really exciting. But do you get a sense that that could happen? Are you hopeful? Is that too far off in advance?
It's too far off in advance. I mean, honestly, first of all, if he's alive, he's running. And he could be on a machine with you know, jumper cables attached to his ear, his one good ear. He's still running and people will still vote for him. So the idea that this thing that says they can't run, they'll figure out a way around that. That's gone effectively, right? I think the entire two-party system needs to shift. Like both of the Republican Party's dead. It's MAGA now. It's a MAGA party. And it's a zombie party because it's claimed this title and name and put on this disguise. But what it really is a MAGA party. And the Democrats don't really, it's so large and unwieldy and cowardly and so beholden to polling and this and that. And there's no spontaneity or fucking juice in there, you know. There's no indication that anyone's alive, so that needs to reimagine itself. And I don't have any confidence right now. The only, not the only, but, you know, AOC and Jasmine are the only two people that I see doing anything. You know, Hakeem Jeffries is calling press conferences saying, I have a nickname for Trump, Captain Chaos. What the fuck are you doing,
yeah,
man? Like, Schumer, don't even get me started.
I know.
They're playing by the old rules. There's that, you know, that old saying in wartime that the generals are always fighting the last war. Mm-hmm. And that's what these guys are doing. They're fighting not even the last war, two wars ago. They're like way stuck in the past. It's World War II and they're back in, you know, an Appomattox courthouse or something. Like they need to not be in charge anymore. And the baton needs to be passed, but also we need to be able to really articulate what the new party means and stands for. And it shouldn't be that hard to do it. You know, democratic values, mm-hmm. you know, equal rights for everybody, you know, protections of things and national security.
Yeah, and pro-democracy. Yeah.
Yeah. Gun reform, you know, because I think mm-hmm. a lot of people don't like that. All of that stuff. And forget about all the, and just focus on that. The flip side of the encroaching fascism here is that it will be easier to explain what we mean when we say we're pro-democracy mm-hmm. after we don't have it for a couple years.
Yeah.
So I just don't know. I mean, when you honestly, we're doing this on Zoom, but we have the cameras off, so you couldn't see how far back in my skull my eyeballs rolled when you said the name Gavin Newsom. Like everybody, you know, and also you're like somebody that we can be excited about. People were pretty excited about Kamala, and it didn't.
Yes,
matter.
They were. They were, but I think the difference with Kamala Harris, and I hate saying this. Is that because she's a woman and because she's a woman of color, we saw a lot of that, you know, there were, I think it was Tom Bonier and Simon Rosenberg were posting, I think it was in Pennsylvania and North Carolina, that the registration for Democrats had fallen and the registration for Republicans had increased by a lot. And so I just, you know, I'm a feminist and I hate saying this. But I think that because she's a woman and because she's a woman of color, and then there's number of other things. Perhaps it was Gaza. There were just a number of other things that kept some Democrats from voting. Because if we look at the vote numbers, and I do believe there was some kind of cheating aside from the legal cheating that we know about. I'm not going to get into that because I can't prove anything and whatever. But we saw a lot more people showing up in 2020. Democrat. Well, I'm not going to say Democrats. I'm going to say voted for Democrat because I think a lot of people who voted for Joe Biden, maybe because he was the older white man, felt comfortable. And I keep going back to the guys who fixed, like, and I'm not going to them anymore, but my car mechanics were Republicans and they hated Donald Trump. I don't know if they voted for Joe Biden, but I can almost guarantee they would not vote for Kamala Harris. So I don't know if these guys would vote for somebody like Gavin Newsom. And I only mention him because right now, and I, like I said, I haven't seen him lately. I think initially he was out there and he was talking a lot and I just don't see him anymore. But I mean, whether it's him or any kind of person, if it were an Obama type character or just somebody who was incredibly, what's the word? I can't think of the word right now, but you know, charismatic, somebody who's really charismatic. I don't know. I mean, I get what you're saying when you're, I totally am with you. I will say, I want to add Chris Murphy to the list of people who are speaking out. I also like Chris Van Hollen. He's really cool. But yeah, I think the AOC and Jasmine Crockett are really the loudest and the ones who are saying the most important things. And are the rest of the Democrats going to follow? I don't know. I doubt it. I don't know. We'll see. I don't know because it's the old school thing is not working. But I don't know either. It's just it's I can't even fucking believe we're here. It's like
it. Like I said,
I can't
like,
believe it.
I just wake up and I'm like, I can't fathom it. It's so unfathomable, and it has so many ripple effects that we're just, or that I'm just beginning to, and I knew this was coming, and it's still having ripple effects that I'm realizing. Oh, wow, it affects that too, you know? And that's how it goes. Look, the numbers in Pennsylvania that you were talking about, I think probably having the world's wealthiest man go in there and spend untold amounts of money trying to get people to the polls, including offering to pay them $1 million to vote, probably influenced it a tiny bit.
Probably,
Just going to go out on a limb here. Just going to go out on a limb and suggest that maybe that's not, you know.
but it was also in North Carolina, so for what that's worth.
I think that, the thing that's the most puzzling to me, is after the election, we didn't hear from Joe, we didn't hear from Kamala.
I know.
And I understand a lot of things. I get the way it broke. I'm willing to believe the election was not rigged. I'm willing to believe it. And okay, fine. It was too quick. She wasn't in there long enough, whatever. We're racist and misogynist as a people, whatever. Fine. But they were still in charge for 2 months and they did nothing. Like
Nothing.
literally nothing. I didn't hear from her. I get it. That was a terrible way to lose. It was it has to feel horribly humiliating. But take a couple days, go out in the woods like Hillary did, get drunk, whatever you need to do, and then you come back and keep fighting.
Yeah.
And there just was none of that.
There was nothing.
And without it reminded me, and again, I feel like we're in this weird loop where we're repeating 2016, now 2017. After the election, everybody knew what happened. Obama could have named a special prosecutor then. There were things that could have happened that he could have done, and he seemed to be like already like, I'm gonna go windsurfing. Remember that? He just left somewhere weird and we didn't hear from him for months. Like, okay, fine, your term is over or whatever, but that their term wasn't over. And Biden welcoming him into
I
the
know.
that room by the fireplace, you have immunity, you could throttle him right now and get it, and it would be okay. And I'm just, there's all these moments I think people are going to look back on in their lives and regret not doing more. Not you, not me, not people listening to this probably, but people in positions of real power who didn't use it didn't realize what the threat was, are going to regret it because they're all responsible for this on some level, including right now. The Senate just like, I don't know. I don't get how, the Egg Bowl Mississippi coach there can hold up nominations for a year and a half, and we can't. Why can't we do that? Is it? Are we just dumb? Like, I don't understand.
I don't either. It's
So,
just gobsmacking. I mean, it's unbelievable. And I keep waiting. Like I wanted to give the Democratic Party some time to acclimate to what's happening. And I don't know how much time that is, because I think what we need to do as voters is put the pressure on them, and doing it in a civil way, obviously. But I don't know if that's going to make the difference, but I think that we need to let them know what we want, and then do they listen to us? I don't know, because like you said, it just boggles the mind. I remember, what I keep going back to is Kamala kept telling everybody we're going to be okay. And this is when during the election season, and I thought she was going to win. I was under the impression that she was going to win, and she was going to win handily. And so when she said to everybody, we're going to be okay, I really wanted to believe it, and I kind of did. And now looking back, it's like, but we're not okay. And I'm not blaming her. I'm not saying it's her fault. I'm just saying that, okay, well, you told us it was going to be okay, and now it's not okay. Where are you? So it's like you're saying, it's like they just didn't say anything. And then Biden welcomes them in with a smile. It's I don't even know what to make of that. I don't know how you can tell everybody everything is going to be okay, we're going to be okay, and then when it's not okay, you say nothing. That's what bothers me. It's not that I'm blaming her or upset at her for telling us it was going to be okay. She's not psychic. She did the best she could under those circumstances. But now now they're just gone.
I mean,
It's like,
we know now that the vote gets certified and the vice president does that. She could have just been like, you know what? I'm sick. Not coming in. Do it without me. Not doing it. I'm just not. And just as a protest, you know, he's not eligible under the 13th, the 14th Amendment. Eligible. The whole thing is ridiculous. But the problem that we're going to have, Kimberly, is that there's no enforcement mechanism. Right. Everyone's like, oh, the courts, the courts, the courts. Sure, we're going to get great, you know, results in the courts because what they're trying to do is unconstitutional and weird for the most part and unpopular and taking power away from the judicial branch, which judges tend not to like. So we're going to win in the courts, but then what?
My
Who's going
last
to.
question, my last question to you was, Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals will not allow Donald to end birthright citizenship for certain, I don't know what that means, certain children of immigrants. But my question was, do they obey? Do they obey the court?
Wait, first let's applaud that fucking ridiculous, you know, it's the most basic fucking thing there is. Of course there's, it's like, come on. I don't think that they can do anything about that one necessarily. But for example, the and I'm not keeping up with this on a day-to-day tracking basis because I just can't. The funding for the NIH was frozen, and then the court said you need to unfreeze it while we figure it out. Well, they just ignored it. I don't think there was any consequences for that. That's a
No.
very minor thing that nobody's paying attention to, but if they don't follow that law, why are they going to follow the next one? And even if they do,
Exactly.
like who's going to enforce it? Like who? Literally, there's no FBI. That's gone. That's a Gestapo as soon as Patel gets in. The Department of Defense is run by this drunk who, is an idiot. Do we want the military to kind of go rogue and defend the Constitution against the sitting president? That's not, I mean, I guess yes, but like that brings up its own problems. You know, state police is what we're looking at, basically. State police, and local police. And you know, if you look back on it before, who was it that got him? We have the mugshot because of a county prosecutor in Georgia, county, Fulton County. And the only person that convicted Trump was the elected district attorney for Manhattan, right? New York City. Again, municipal level person got him. No higher than that. Certainly no federal. It's the only person that got him. So it can happen. States are powerful. My governor, Kathy Hochul, was, you know, pretty adamant that we're not going to bow to the king in New York here. So we do have power. The states have power. If there's no laws anymore, you know, if it comes to that level, we'll just leave. You know, we don't have to stick around. We don't, nobody wants that, but I would rather do that than live under the yoke of some idiot dictator for the rest of my life. Does that
Fun
count as ending it
times.
on a on a on an up note? I mean,
I
I
know,
don't
it's
know.
just like such an uplifting
But I
podcast.
don't want to give the sense that it's hopeless because it's
No,
not. Like I
no.
really do think that most people, in fact, I know this is true. Most people do not have any fucking idea what's happening. They do not know. They do not understand. And there will come a time pretty quickly when they will. Like even the you go read the New York Times, the WaPo, now they're all in on this. Now they really are reporting all the stuff that's happening. And it's all batshit, and it's all bad, and it's all unprecedented, and it's all terrifying, but it's also, you know, it's going to not like even the when Elon was in the Oval Office with the kid picking his nose, like how do you spin that on Fox News? You have to show it. How do you do people look at Trump and Musk sitting there side by side and Trump grinning idiotically, like as some sort of alpha male thing? Like, it doesn't look like it. Like, how do you spin that? So, people, even the people that watch these right wing things, they have to be forming some opinion that at the very least, the guy's not up there operating like he's the alpha, whatever they like, the thing they like that doesn't exist.
Yeah, the strong man, yeah.
Yeah, he's not even that. He can't even strongman right.
Oh my God, I know, it's just all so pathetic. It's just like I said, I can't, I mean, I can't believe what's happening. I think I was saying this all through his first term, and now it's like that on crack. So, I mean,
No,
oh.
this is a whole other animal.
Yeah,
It
it
really
is.
is. It really
Well,
is.
you know, I don't know. None of us know exactly how this is going to play out. But, you know, to end this with, I don't know if this is even hope, but if there is hope, and if there is some kind of a reorganization of parties or how we do things in this country, this could potentially mean that we do get Medicare for all. It might take a while, but if you fuck with people, and you really, you know, I mean, the difference between, I lived in Russia, I lived in Soviet Russia in 1981, and I saw a nation who just would, you know, they were too afraid to fight. They would literally walk down the streets with their head facing the ground. I mean, the Russians are a certain kind of a people, and they're not like the American people, but the difference is that that's all they ever knew.
Right.
American people have had, you know, freedom. People like to argue about that, but we have had democratic freedom and we've never known anything different, especially modern day America. So you start fucking with all that stuff that people are used to. I don't know how Americans are going to react. If they're terrified that the military is going to come and shoot them, if they're terrified that they're going to, you know, lose whatever it is that they want, I think most of the time people will kind of just say, well, I'm just going to protect my family. I'm just going to keep my head down and shut up. But at the same time, you've got this group of people who are used to having their freedom, and they will fight for it because there's that group of people who will just die instead of, like, you know, you were talking about, I'd rather just, you know, live in a state under the state power than the craziness of what's going on. But I guess we're just, it's yet to be determined. We'll see
It's like,
how we're going to go.
I think you're right, and that's a good point. Like, Americans don't like to be told what to do.
Yeah, not
That's
at
it.
all.
It boils down to that, especially the MAGA people, frankly.
Yeah.
That's part of the reason why they're so angry. So, I think you're right, and it will be an opportunity to fix shit. That's
Yeah.
true. If we can get through this, it's an opportunity to fix stuff. Can I real quick? I just want to plug a couple things if I
Of
can.
course, I was going to have you plug everything.
Okay, good. I have a book of essays out called The Age of Unreality, which you can get on Amazon or your local bookstore if you prefer not to shop at Amazon. I write essays on Sunday about literature. And since the election, I've written a lot about the literature of the interwar period and tyranny specifically. So, if you want something that's a little more not related directly to Trump, but still kind of in the ballpark and hopeful, that's a nice book to read, I think. Again, it's called The Age of Unreality. And on Monday, February 24th, if you're in New York City at 6 p.m. at the Ukrainian Institute on the Upper East Side, I will be basically interviewing Alexander Vindman,
Oh, wow.
who has a book coming out,
Awesome.
which is excellent. And I'm very excited about it. So if you're around in New York, and especially this week, if you want to, support Ukraine,
Yeah.
come down to the Ukrainian Institute and check us out.
Okay, then just tell us about all your other stuff, Prevail and all, and your books and everything.
Oh, yeah, I have a podcast called Prevail. I have a show called The 5-8 that I do with my friend Stephanie Koff on Friday nights, live at 8 p.m. Eastern. I've got a bunch of books out. I'm on Blue Sky. I'm still on Twitter, but I try not to go there. I think that's pretty much it. Yeah. There's a
Awesome.
lot. There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's always good to talk to you, even when we're talking about horrible things like this, because you're really smart. And I recommend everybody go read what Greg writes. It doesn't matter what it is, whether it's Prevail, the books, read it all. It's just so good. Greg is awesome that way. And thank you so much for coming by and chatting with me today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks. Always great to see you.
Hi, I'm Dan Dunn, the host of What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn, a show that mixes history, culture, politics, famous people, and booze, and strains it through the cognitive mesh of my sozzled gray matter. Join me each week as I take a lighthearted stroll through the consequential role that alcohol has played through the ages, and how it shaped key moments in history, quite literally changing the world. For instance, did you know that Thomas Jefferson started the first U.S. wine company in Virginia with investments from George Washington and Ben Franklin? It's true. And if you're wondering whose winery sits across the street from Jefferson's estate today, here's a hint. What's orange, president, and has a very good brain and the best people. I'll also tell you about new stuff to drink, trends, recipes, and other things that are good to know. And I'll chat up celebrities, along with the movers and shakers of the adult beverage world. And since this is a show about alcohol, I'd like to remind you that drinking can cause memory loss. Or even worse, memory loss. Where was I? Oh, right. Plugging my show. It's called What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn. It's fun, I promise. So come on, pull up a bar stool, and let's kick it.
It's no surprise that newsmakers try to manipulate the audience. They want you to believe that they are the one holding the line and they'll use any trick they can to get you there. But don't let them fool you. Get unspun. I'm Amanda Sturgill. I've been a reporter, and today I teach future reporters to cut the spin and think critically about what newsmakers say. My podcast, Unspun, shows you how to know when you're being manipulated by the news. Learn to spot the tricks and how to make up your own mind about what's true. So if you're tired of being fooled by the news, subscribe to Unspun today. Unspun. Because you deserve the truth.